was in the office for about a week. I had a briefing from the litigation folks, the lawyers in the agency, and I was pleased to find out that after only 1 week, I had already been sued for over $100 billion. There are certainly some legitimate claims in there, but I kind of, I'm not so used to all this waste of your taxpayers' dollars as we go through all of these kinds of things. So we're going to be mindful of that as well. But I really am pleased to be here today because I do believe, being from beef country, I guess I know that you are a vital part of the economy. And really, the efforts that you put forth in your everyday lives make this country better, providing the food and the hides and part of our economic process is so important to us. You know, I've been there a short period of time. I already love this agency. The USDA is involved in so many things, in so many efforts, and I'm pleased that you're a part of that. I can't tell you how great the people are over there. And the mission of the agency, and it's because, they're like you. They've been out there. They lived on the land. They understand the pillars of our economics and our society, and they work hard to deliver the mission. I want you to know also that when we found out about the horrible tornadoes and things in Tennessee and Mississippi and Missouri Kentucky and Alabama, just this last Tuesday, immediately we dispatched USDA people from Ag Central in Washington, D.C., as well as field offices all over the country to help in that recovery and rebuilding effort that's going to take place there. And I want to say that our thoughts and prayers are with the folks who lost their homes and their loved ones in the tornadoes there. And I was pleased that the president is in Tennessee today to offer his support to let folks know that the American people are standing with them and our government will be there to help them get back on their feet. I also want to commend all of you for your generosity, the generosity that you've shown to your fellow cattlemen who are caught in natural disasters. The National Cattlemen's Foundation did great work in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, and helping ranchers in North Dakota, too, and other High Plains states after they've been hit hard with winter storms. It's a great foundation, and we appreciate your work out there. I just got into Washington, as I mentioned, a couple of weeks ago, and it's a challenge, to take on the Secretary of Agriculture's job, but it is certainly an honor. And as I've kind of weaved my way into the workings of the agency. I wasn't there very long, and already beef was very much on top of mind. My second day on the job, we were presented with a Humane Society videotape of how cows were being handled at the Hallmark Westland meat plants in Chino, California. I don't know if you've seen the video, but it shows cows that are being handled in ways that I can only describe as shocking and disturbing. I immediately ordered a full investigation by our Inspector General, as well as the Food and Safety Inspection Service and the Agriculture Marketing Service. We suspended Hallmark Westland as a supplier to the federal food and nutrition programs. Now, I've carried with me a motto into office, into my public service arena. It says, do the right thing, and it was the right thing to suspend that effort. And I want you to know that the investigation is still underway, but we've already found evidence that there are egregious violations of our regulations on humane handling of animals. And I want you to know that I recognize how important of a matter this is to the beef industry. I want to assure you that our investigation will be probing and thorough, and that any corrective actions it calls for will be taken swiftly. Our communications to the public about food safety questions in this matter will be clear and consistent. The public's confidence in the safety of our food supply is something we have to earn every day at the USDA. It is the foundation of your industry. And I have to tell you, I'm going to be doing my part in that. I, I'm on the trail here for a few days, and I'm going to be eating a lot of hamburgers as we go. But, that mission of providing food safety is so important to it. And the message that you all deliver of providing a good, clean, abundant, safe food supply in this country is important. That's why even in a tight budget year, we are boosting spending at USDA on food and safety inspection, including our efforts to improve our ability to detect E. coli and other pathogens. We did see an increase in outbreaks last year that caused USDA to immediately respond. And we're now working together with the beef industry and other stakeholders to make sure that in the areas of research, inspection changes in industry, and public education materials that we provide the proper direction. You know, all of us face barriers and obstacles of every day and as we try to get our jobs done. They can be financial, historical, practical, certainly I'm learning in Washington, political, but all of us are out there pushing to get things done and to find solutions to the problems that we face. When you're down there in the arena, as Theodore Roosevelt might say, amid all the dust and the sweat and the blood, it's easy to lose sight of the bigger picture, the longer horizon, and to overlook how much has actually been accomplished. When I went back over the last year at the Department of Agriculture's ongoing effort to win fair access for American beef in markets all over the world, it strikes me that really a good deal has been accomplished. In May of last year, we won the designation as a controlled risk nation. With that rating in hand, we've been able to open markets for American beef that had previously been closed to us. And once those markets are open, what we see is that our export sales grow rapidly as consumers respond to the quality of American beef. In fact, we expect our exports of beef for 2007 to total more than $2.6 billion, and that's up over 30%. We still have work to do to get back to where we were before 2003, but the trend is clearly in the right direction. And momentum is on our side. Just in the last couple of months, Indonesia and Barbados and the Philippines have all agreed to open their markets to U.S. beef under OIE guidelines. And we have resumed beef shipments to Russia. And in fact, the first load of containers were moved out just last month. And we expect to see continued growth in that market. We're actively engaging with Taiwan and its government. We're now seeking a risk assessment on U.S. beef and beef products. We're pleased that this is moving along expeditiously, and we are optimistic that we'll make a science-based decision consistent with OIE guidelines in the near future. We're also very interactive with Korea, and I believe we have reason to be optimistic. I must tell you that my new friend that I visit with almost every day, either in person or on the phone, is Trade Ambassador Susan Schwab. She's very actively pursuing your interests out there. And I believe that we have reason to be optimistic. We're encouraged by recent statements in the transition team of incoming Korean President Lee Myung-bak. He understands the importance of fully reopening the Korean beef market. We look forward to working with the incoming administration to achieve a full reopening of this important market as soon as possible. And we will continue working with the government of Japan at the highest levels to bring their market into full OE compliance as well. When I visited with the president had the conversation about me becoming the Secretary of Agriculture, he said, "Ed, I want you to weigh in on trade issues. This is important." He's from an agriculture state. He understands what needs to be done in trade out there, and he asked me to get involved, and I certainly will. I'm going to, and I certainly will be actively engaged in the future. We all believe that the progress we have made in opening markets around the world to U.S. beef in just the last 6 months shows what a valuable tool our OIE classification is. We worked long and hard to get it. It provides an objective and science-based platform for trade, and we plan to stand by it. I want you to know that removing the trade barriers for U.S. beef that are still out there remains a top priority of President Bush. He's very interested in getting this done, and he's charged us with the task to making it happen. And he wants us to do all we can over the next year to help all of us compete fairly in a bigger share of export markets. You know, that export market is so important to us. Overall, our agriculture exports have never been stronger. We have benefited from a very competitive dollar and strong growing demand for our products in foreign markets. That's how we generated $82 billion in export sales last year, the fourth record year in a row. And that's why we are projecting that we will hit another record of $91 billion in sales this year. One of the things we are seeing is a new dynamic in the marketplace. Those 1 billion new middle-class consumers that have been expecting to emerge in developing countries over the next decade have arrived. They are making their presence felt in China and Mexico and other markets. They are buying more prepared foods and their more dairy and meat products. We believe U.S. beef can capture an even larger part of this market, and we want to work with you to make sure that that happens. This administration is firmly committed to free trade. Winning passage of the pending free trade agreements in Colombia, Panama, and Korea is one of President Bush's top priorities for the coming year. And I assure you that we will be working on Congress to make that happen. When I visited with the president about taking the job, I said, well, are we just going to caretake the position until the end of the year? Am I going to be a figurehead there? What's the mission? And he said, our effort is to run as fast as we can to get over the finish line in record time. And I can assure you that we will be engaged and be there because working on this trade issue is so important for us. Taking together the four agreements in Colombia, Panama, Korea, and what is the other one? We have four of them out there. But together, they could open up more than $3 billion of new export sales for America's farmers and ranchers. And we don't have to look for examples of how that can work. In 1994, the NAFTA agreements created a free trade zone covering the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. I know there's a lot of discussion about those types of agreements and whether they're good or bad, but since that agreement has been signed, our agriculture exports to Canada and to Mexico have grown from about $10 billion a year to more than $25 billion a year in value. Today, Mexico is the largest export market for U.S. beef, and Canada is number two. Those are two pretty strong arguments for free trade. And we view bilateral and regional free trade agreements as vital tools for expanding our market access. But multilateral talks, such as the Doha Round, sponsored by the World Trade Organization, offer even greater potential for gains. That's why we remain committed to the Doha Round of trade talks, and we will continue to push for a comprehensive agreement this year that is fair to all parties. Along with the agreements we make with other nations, one of the most important ways that we can get our agriculture trade policy is through the Farm Bill. The Farm Bill is in the midst of the conference process right now between the House and the Senate. But as I know you have all heard, the administration has serious concerns about both the House and the Senate versions of the bill. If the changes are not made in the area of taxes and reform on farm programs, the president has said that he will veto this legislation. We simply don't believe that programs in the Farm Bill should be funded by tax increases on the rest of our country. We don't believe that subsidy payments should continue to go to people who don't need them and aren't involved in production agriculture, and that we should use those monies to put into the hands of people who need a hand up. We don't believe that now, when we are seeing record prices for so many commodities, record exports, and very strong farm income, it is the time to raise target prices or loan rates. It's not to say that there aren't good things in the Farm Bill as they stand, because there are. In fact, we probably have broad agreement on over 90% of the things that are in the bills. One good thing is the increased funding for conservation programs that both the House and the Senate would provide. When the administration put its farm bills together last year, we proposed a, you know, I'm already saying we, I wasn't even a part of it, but we as an administration proposed a greater spending increase for conservation than any other program area. The House and the Senate have taken different roads than the one we proposed, but they both provide more support for conservation. We believe that support is appropriate and that programs that help farmers and ranchers in non-trade distorting ways while bringing environmental benefits to the broader community are important. Both the House and the Senate versions of the Farm Bill include language that would make it easier to comply with the country of origin labeling requirements. And I know that's something that you all have worked very hard to bring about. All of you have a lot at stake in whether or not we have a successful conclusion to the Farm Bill process this year. And if you make your voices heard in this debate, and I know you will, it will help all of us in Washington find the common ground that we can all agree on. And I must say, over the last several days, I've become more optimistic about finding ways that we can narrow the gap between the administration, between the House and the Senate, so that we can put on the table a farm bill that's acceptable to the taxpayers of the United States and that will deliver the mission and the programs and the public policy that will support the cattle industry as we move forward. I also want to say now a word about feed prices, because I know that's been causing a good deal of concern for you over the last year. There's no getting away from the reality that our nation must reduce its dependence on imported oil and find ways to generate more of its energy here at home. That means making more renewable fuel, more ethanol, more biodiesel, and doing it as effectively as possible. For today and tomorrow, the growing demand of ethanol is likely going to mean that corn prices will stay higher than you want them to be. But I believe that the energy bill that Congress passed and President Bush signed last year does offer us an outline to where we are going to be headed in the future on this issue, and that is towards cellulosic ethanol production. The new renewable fuel standard created by the energy bill requires us to boost grain-based ethanol production this year to 9 billion gallons. But ladies and gentlemen, it also requires us to meet a rising portion of our renewable fuel needs from cellulosic and other non-grain sources starting just 1 year from now in 2009. And as that technology develops and as we move into non-feed sources to generate our energy needs, it will stop distorting the prices of your feed. By the time the full mandate of 36 billion gallons of renewable fuels kicks off in 15 years from now, 21 billion gallons of that, or nearly 60%, will come from cellulosic fuel and other advanced biofuels. And I believe that this mandate is going to spark an innovation that we will need to make more cellulosic biofuels an economic and practical alternative to that corn-based ethanol. This new mandate offers a tremendous opportunity for us to work with farmers and ranchers to develop new energy crops, such as switchgrass, that can be cultivated on land that may also be eligible for conservation protection. Let me now return to a subject that is very important to us at the USDA, and I believe can be a great help to all of you, and that is the National Animal ID System. We have continued to register premises that we now have more than 440,000 enrolled, and this is an essential first step to having a modern integrated approach to animal identification and tracing. But we still have a ways to enroll all of the 1.4 million premises around the country where livestock is being raised. Registration is free, it's easy, it's voluntary, and it's the right thing to do. So if you haven't done so already, please make this year the year that you sign up for this important effort. In closing, I want to commend you for the leadership roles that you have taken. You know, you wouldn't be here if you hadn't stepped forward in an effort to improve your ranch, your farms, to improve your economy, to improve your communities, and to improve your industry. It shows me that you are willing to engage and to be involved and help the effort to move our country forward and to make America better. And I so much appreciate that. You have all taken your time and your money and your efforts to be here and be a part of this. I was thinking of Theodore Roosevelt when I was riding in the car this morning. And, you know, probably one of the most visible beef ranchers out there. You know, when he moved to the Badlands in North Dakota, it was a tough time for him. His mother and his wife had died on the same day, Valentine's Day. He moved out to North Dakota to seek solace and to repair his soul and to gain physical strength. He was a sickly individual and born and bred blue blood from the East and didn't understand the Old West and its values. He started three cattle ranches and became an important part of the beef economy in North Dakota. And as often happens in this industry and the tough issues it faces, he failed as a cattle rancher. But it was there that he said, had it not been for my time living and working in North Dakota, I never would have been president of the United States. And you know, it wasn't North Dakota. I'd like to say it was North Dakota because that's my home. But it wasn't North Dakota. It was Teddy Roosevelt living on the land. It was raising cattle. It was learning frontier justice and strength and hard work and a good day's pay for the effort that you put in. It was learning how to give a neighbor a hand up when in need. It was learning about character and honesty. And it was those foundations that Theodore Roosevelt learned from our ancestors, the people that came before us that created those very cornerstones of the foundations of the United States of America that are inspiring to me. And when I look and see all of you, I know that that's what you do in your everyday lives. You are the ones that are generating the character of our society. And so I want to urge you to continue along that path. I think it's so important that we strengthen the United States today, and as we see the strife and the pollution and the crime in our country, I in my heart know that people in this room are the basis of improving our society as we go forward. So I ask you to do a few things for me as I leave today. Take the opportunity to say to your spouse that I love you and I respect you. That's so important. And every time you get a chance, hug your children and tell them that you're proud of them. You know, you're really raising the future leaders in our community. You're raising the future leaders in our states and in our country. Teach them, help them to be kind and considerate and helpful servants to the public good. Importantly, find someone out there that you can forgive. It makes you feel better, and it's a good deal. And I ask you to do these things because I honor and respect you and the work that you do every day to help our country achieve its greatest heights, to make our country the greatest in the world. And it is through you that we provide hope and a future. Thank you for the opportunity to be with you today. It's an honor for me to be here.